Hey everyone, I'm Adria.
And I'm Brooke.
And this is What Have You Done?
And we're back.
How long has it been? I didn't even look at when our last recording was.
When I looked at Castos, which that was a whole adventure trying to find what site we used to use, but I did find it. And the last time paid, which was not the last time we recorded, was December 2022. So it's probably been close to 2 years since we've done this, which is crazy that much time has gone by.
Yeah, it is crazy. It's so weird.
I know. But I'm excited that we are starting back up and we have a little bit of a different way we're going to go about it this time, which is a little more organized, which I think we needed.
Yes, you needed a little bit of reining in.
Yeah, but that's, you know.
Too many options.
We all go through that. We all have to figure it out. So we're coming back strong, hopefully. And do you want to tell them a little bit about how we're going to go about it now?
Yeah. So we're going to try and keep on theme every time we record. So we're starting off with states and trying to find true crime-ish stories from each state, whether it be like serial killers or abductions or missing people, missing persons, go from there. And also add in some fun facts and maybe news stories about the states that we're going over, I guess you would say.
Yeah, right? And then end it out with a little bit of a palate cleanser, fun fact, Snapple fact. So just to add a little bit more, I was trying to think, when I listen to podcasts, I was trying to think about what I like to hear. And obviously that's not everybody's opinion, but I was trying to get a little bit of every aspect and hopefully our, you know, our original idea of people writing in with their own stories, that will end up becoming a thing too, and that's an aspect we can add. So just a little bit of everything, different entertainment to hopefully hit different sides of what people like.
Yeah. And hopefully it takes up from there and it's not so hard to sit down and research stuff. And
yeah, so we
I don't know, I'm not very busy anymore, so I have more time on my hands.
We've set a realistic goal right now for us, which is 2 episodes a month, the first and third Wednesday of every month. Because last time we tried for 4 a month and that didn't work. And then we fell off because we both obviously work full time. So it's just a lot more work than we thought, a lot more time consuming than we thought. Yeah. So I think if we set a realistic goal to start and stick to that, then we can figure it out and go from there.
Here's hoping. So what's all been right going on with you in the last year? Anything you want to update anybody about?
Oh, God. So much has happened in the last, 2 years. I don't know. Biggest thing, I live in a new apartment now. My last one kind of started to fall apart. My landlord sucked. He let part of the roof fall off and water got in there. And then one night my ceilings just started pouring water through the light fixtures in the ceiling. So fire department came, had to shut out the electricity, couldn't get a hold of the landlord. And it was all just a shit show. So we literally picked up, me and my roommate at the time picked up our shit the next day and got 90% of it out. And yeah. And thankfully the night before all that happened, me and my girlfriend had just secured an apartment anyway. So it kind of was perfect timing, ironic timing, however you want to say it. Because that's the kind of things that happen in our lives. But I guess for once, this has worked a little bit in favor. So, yeah, we've been here for 4 months. It's awesome. It has a pool, which I've been enjoying. And I actually have been able to get a little bit of a tan, so I don't look dead.
Sweet.
That's it's the little things, you know? That's probably my biggest life update. We're still working away at the same job. What about you?
Yes.
What's the most interesting thing that's happened to you in the last 2 years?
Since we last recorded, let me see. you know, life is pretty much the same. I lost a bunch of weight, but no one can really see that. that's but that's pretty much because I think that was after.
Yeah, I was thinking that about was, that. That that was a big change. Yeah,
November of 22.
Which has been awesome. So you look awesome. You must feel awesome.
Thanks. I do feel a lot better. I feel a lot better now that it's summer and I like I'm still sweaty, but I'm not like dying like I usually do when I or what I used to do when I went outside, and so it's a lot better. I like almost never have to use my asthma inhaler. Wow. Which is sweet.
That's awesome. Yeah. Yeah, you look really good. You've definitely come a long way. And I'm very happy for you.
Yeah. So I guess along with that, mental health gets better too. I haven't like get big issues or anything, so it's been good.
That's definitely good. That's what we like to hear. Stay insane.
Like to hear it.
For the most part.
So I guess we can get down to our first story. First story back. So I don't know if we already said it, but our first state that we're going to focus on is Alabama. And I think I just picked that one because it's first in the alphabet. So I like a list.
Which you pride and yourself in
knowing. Like you had said.
You pride yourself in knowing the states in alphabetical order.
Oh, yeah. One of my biggest life accomplishments, probably. That and children.
That and children. Fair. So you went about it in... I think you're going to continue to go alphabetical for the most part, right?
Yeah, I'm going to try to.
And then I just picked whatever because I like chaos, so.
Yeah, either way.
So we're going to start out with the news headline story from Alabama, right?
Yeah. So just to get a taste of what Alabama's all about. So I tried to look for stuff that was in within the last year. So this story headline is out of Leeds, Alabama, L-E-E-D-S. And the headline that stuck out to me was, a man crashes his car outside a Bass Pro Shop in Alabama, stripped down to his birthday suit, and plunged into the giant aquarium inside the store, police say.
Okay. Now,
have you ever been to a Bass Pro Shop?
I have.
Or I've Cabela's?
I've been with my dad a couple times. Have? It's a crazy place.
Yeah, and they have that big ass aquarium in the middle of it. I don't know if all of them have. The couple that I've been to have a huge aquarium in it.
So is that what this guy, so this guy dove went into for a with all the fish? Swim.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yikes. Okay. So you want to go ahead and tell us what's wrong with this guy? Because clearly something's up.
Yeah. So I don't know if they actually get down to what's actually wrong with him. But it says, this ordeal happened Thursday night in front of shocked shoppers in the town just outside Birmingham, Leeds Police Chief Paul Irwin said. The 42-year-old Alabama man did a cannonball leap into the aquarium and then stood under a waterfall. He left the water to yell at two officers and then dove back into the aquarium, police said. The man eventually climbed over the side of the aquarium and fell to the concrete floor below. The police then apprehended him, AI.com reported. He faces several charges, including public lewdness, disorderly conduct, and criminal mischief. The man was in the water for about 5 minutes when officers arrived. No fish were harmed during this escapade.
Well, that's
so good. So that was all. Okay. Yeah, that's all that was in the article. It doesn't explain what was going on with him. Nothing.
Huh. Well, so obviously, I wonder if it was like,
he's in Alabama.
I wonder if it was like, Did he crash his car on purpose? Like, how quick do you come up with crashing your car and then be like, you know what? I'm going to go into this Bass Pro Shop for a swim. You know, like, was that all a plan?
I don't know. It sounds like on the fly he came up with that.
Well,
like, I get mean, it? On they're... the fly? Like, fishing?
That was good. I guess there's more harmful things to do, so.
Yeah. Yeah, there's some good fun.
Like I said, we like a little chaos, so. That would have made my day. I would have laughed pretty hard watching that guy do that.
Oh, yeah. Imagine seeing that going on. I'm just picturing this guy falling from the top of it all the way down to the floor. and then going back in. Like, what? That sounds a little methy to me. Like, maybe a little of that methy. Was going on, but...
Yeah,
but I don't know. Okay, so now we can go into our story, the one that I have, which is not as hilarious as that. This story is about Audrey, Audrey Marie Hilly.
Okay.
Is going to be the focus of this. So Audrey Marie Hilly was born Audrey Marie Fraser in Anniston, Alabama. So she was born on June 4th, 1933, Gemini.
Oh, so her
Her parents, Huey and Lucille Fraser, led pretty quiet lives. They both worked as school teachers, and she was their only child. Not a lot was mentioned in the couple stories they've looked through about her. It pretty much just fast forwards to May 8th, 1951. Audrey married a businessman named Frank Hilly, and over the years they had two children together, Mike and Carol. Audrey worked as a secretary, and Frank made pretty good money off of different business ventures that he had. Audrey did have a little bit of a spending problem. She liked her shopping and her cigs, so she spent a lot of money on that kind of stuff. So even though they made a good amount of money, they were constantly trying to make ends meet, and it caused a lot of tension in the marriage, as money problems will. But to ease the tension, Audrey came up with a brilliant plan to make more money on the side and keep her husband happy. I don't know if you want to take a guess at what she did.
Take a guess. It made her husband happy?
Well, it made him happy because he didn't have to worry about money as much.
Yeah. Well, my first guess would be having affairs, because that's usually what ends up happening, but that doesn't make you money, typically.
Typically. She did have affairs. She began sleeping with her bosses in exchange for monetary bonuses and superior performance reviews to earn bigger raises.
Wow. Okay. Well, look at that.
So you nailed it. Yep. <That's funny. laughs> Even though their financial situation started getting better, a mysterious illness started to take over the family. More specifically, with Frank and their son, Mike. So, go ahead.
So, what's her name? Audrey?
Yes.
So, Audrey's not sick, just her husband and her son?
Yes. Yeah. I think the rest, Audrey and her daughter had minor symptoms, but was mostly Frank and their son.
Did they just have two kids together?
Yes. Yep. Just the two kids, Mike and Carol.
Okay.
Doctors attributed both their symptoms to be similar to the flu and just kind of treated them whenever symptoms flared up. Mike was thankful that when he went off to seminary school that his symptoms pretty much vanished. So he went off to be a priest, or I don't know if seminary school is strictly for priests, but it's a religious, to become something religious, I guess. And he got better when he went away.
That's so weird.
Yeah, right. And fast forward to March 1975. Frank's symptoms were so bad that he left work early one day just to find Audrey in bed with her boss. After a brief scuffle, her boss was kicked out and Frank and Audrey found themselves at extreme odds with each other. Understandable.
Yeah, that'll do it.
In early May of 1975, Frank had been getting advice from his son, Mike, who was now an ordained minister, and the couple's relationship seemed to be getting better. But that's when Frank suddenly started complaining of severe nausea and stomach pain, which the doctors diagnosed as just a viral stomach ache, which, you know, it sounds like pretty much just saying, oh, hey, I lost my train of thought for a second there. I feel like that's just like a non-diagnosis. Like something you'll go to the doctor for and be like, oh, okay.
Right. How many times have they had to tell him he has a stomach ache at this point? That's a lot of stomach aches.
Exactly.
When you're conveniently around your wife.
Right. And hopefully the copay wasn't too much to have to hear that over and over.
What do you think copays were like back then?
I wonder if it was even a thing back then. I don't know.
Let's see. You keep telling your story. Yeah, I'll find an answer.
Okay. So let me find. So after treatments, his symptoms got so bad that he was finally admitted to the hospital for treatment. There, they discovered that Frank's liver was failing, and he was diagnosed with hepatitis. So it was so far gone that there was no way to cure him from it, and he actually passed away May 25th, 1975.
Okay.
At Audrey's request, yeah, he passed away.
Okay.
Audrey, his wife, requested an autopsy to be performed, which revealed swollen kidneys and lungs, bilateral pneumonia, so in both lungs, and inflammation of the stomach. I know, he was messed up. The doctors concluded that symptoms all seemed to correlate with hepatitis, so that was his official cause of death on the death certificate.
Okay.
So they ruled it hepatitis. It is worth to note that Frank had a pretty sizable life insurance policy for that time. His payout was $31,140, which today would be $176,300. And she was able to collect on that.
Also, so weird.
Conveniently.
By the way,
exactly.
There probably were copays by the time he was going there. It said like mid-20th century is when that started.
Oh, so that's a long time ago.
Yeah, so before, he started getting sick pretty early, but yeah.
Weird.
Isn't that neat? They've been taking our money for a long time.
We're in the 21st century, right?
I don't know. And you know what's funny is when it said that, it started out with the answer being in the mid-20th century, and I was like, oh, gotta keep reading because I don't know when that is. But then it mentions,
right.
It mentions the 1920s, 1950s. 1950s and to 1960s is when health insurance became more common. So
that gave me my answer.
All right. So, yes.
All right. So, Audrey, being the preparer that she is, she thought that the family should be prepared in case the illness persisted through the family. And she took out a $25,000 life insurance policy on their daughter, Carol, with an additional $25,000 rider in case of an accidental death. So this year, that policy would be worth $233,000 if she took it out now.
It took out who's the policy for?
She took it out on Carol, who is their daughter.
Oh, God. Okay.
So, after she took those out in 1978, so a few years later, that's when she took the policy out, was in 1978. Within a few months of Audrey taking out that policy, Carol started to get sick. Weird. She had the same pain, nausea that her father had. She got admitted to the hospital pretty quickly. She was there several times, but doctors really couldn't find any cause for the ailments. Audrey was so desperate to get her daughter some relief that she started giving her vitamin shots to help with the nausea and try to help her immune system.
I'm going to take a quick guess and guess those are not vitamin shots.
I don't think it's vitamins per se. Carol's physician started to think that the symptoms were psychosomatic, that she was just kind of making it up in her head. And they admitted to her to a
Who thought that?
That her doctors started thinking that she was just kind of creating these symptoms in her head because her father died the same way, pretty much attributing it to trauma. So she ended up getting admitted to a hospital for psychiatric care. While she was there, her mother visited pretty often, and she still was making sure to supplement her daughter's care with her special vitamin shots.
What year was this again?
1978.
That's interesting that she's allowed to go in there with vitamin shots.
Right. Yeah.
Continue to give her daughter medicine who's in there for mental help.
Well, I did read that.
What they think she needs.
I did read that she convinced her daughter not to tell anybody that her mother was giving her these shots. It wasn't under a doctor's supervision or anything. It was just kind of under the, what is it called? Under the table? I don't know. So after Carol had been at the hospital for a month, doctors started noticing some things that could indicate that she was having more of a reaction to heavy metal poisoning due to her having numbness in her hands and feet and really poor reflexes. At the same time, Audrey was arrested for forging checks to the life insurance company that her daughter's policy was on. So Audrey's in jail now, and her daughter's still at the hospital. Oh. Yeah.
Okay.
Doctors performed tests that showed arsenic levels of over 100 times normal levels on the shafts of her hair, indicating that she had been giving higher and higher doses over the last 4 to 8 months. The same day that the results came back, Frank's body was exhumed and tested for arsenic. Results showed that he had also been given lethal doses of arsenic, resulting in his death. So,
yikes. Well, I'm glad they're figuring it out. I think when they can test your hair and see, like, that's like, you can't get much out of hair, but that's the one thing you can, where they, like, can see exactly, like, when you've had it too, based on, like, your hair growth. And, like, I think that's so neat. That's such a crazy thing to me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It is crazy that they can pick out anything from the hair. So when and from other things too, because when I got the surgery done in 2022, you have to quit smoking if you are a smoker, which I wasn't at the time, but I had in my medical records, it said former smoker. So they were like, oh, we have to test you just to make sure you have no nicotine in your body. And I was like, that's so weird. So they could test you for pretty much anything to see if you're lying. They're like, oh, if you had a cigarette yesterday.
With hair?
They didn't do that with hair. They did it by blood. So I guess nicotine even hangs out in the blood, which I didn't even think of. I was like, how are you going to test if I've smoked cigarettes? You know? So I guess it has a lot to do with healing. Anywho.
No, that's all right. That makes sense.
So Audrey obviously got arrested while she was already in jail in October for the attempted murder of her daughter. So that's October 1978. Anniston Police Department found a vial in her purse with tests revealed the presence of arsenic. 2 weeks later, Frank's sister found a jar of rat poison, which contained about 2% arsenic in it. On November 9th, Marie was released on bail, after which she registered at a local motel under an assumed name and disappeared, while a note left behind pretty much indicating that she might have been kidnapped, quote unquote. So she was at that point listed as a fugitive from the law. So she skipped town.
Is that how this ends?
No. So that
was like, yikes. Okay.
So that was in October. On November 19th, there was a burglary at Audrey's aunt's house. Audrey's aunt's car was stolen, as well as some clothes in an overnight bag. Investigators found a note in the house reading, "Do not call the police. We will burn you out if you do. We found what we wanted and will not bother you again." 2 months later, in January 1980, Marie was indicted for Frank's murder in absentia. So she was convicted of that, even though she wasn't there. Subsequently, investigators found that both her mother and her mother-in-law had significant but not fatal traces of arsenic in their systems when they died. So she's been poisoning everyone. The remains of...
Even on the run? They haven't found her, right?
They haven't found her, but I think that they just went ahead and tested people in her lives. And they found that pretty much everyone that was around her had a little bit more than normal traces of arsenic in their systems, indicating that at some point they had ingested it.
Okay. So she's taken her little purse arsenic around and...
Yes. And been slipping
putting it into whatever of anybody she comes in contact with, pretty much.
Yeah. Pretty much.
Huh. Okay.
So the remains of an 11-year-old girl that was a friend of her daughter, Carol, who had died of indeterminate causes in 1974, were also exhumed, but they only had a normal amount of arsenic in there, which I'm not sure what the normal amount is, but it was nothing suspicious. Gibson was one of many neighborhood children who had fallen ill after drinking beverages that they had been given during the visits to the Hilly household. Two police officers had been dispatched to a domestic disturbance at the Hilly household, also reported coming down with nausea and stomach cramps after drinking coffee that Audrey had offered them. So it's just she's just pretty much dosing everybody that she comes into contact with.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like she's being careful whatsoever. You know, like, if you do it to absolutely everybody, well, people are going to notice, but...
Yeah, I guess eventually. It sounds like she got away with it for a pretty long time.
Yeah, she's still, like, they don't know where she is at this point?
Still don't know where she is. She remained a fugitive for a little more than 3 years.
Yikes. Okay, so we're assuming... So she disappeared for a couple months, then her aunt's house got broken into?
Yeah, and they stole her car.
And that was her? We're assuming?
We're assuming it was her getting supplies to go on the run.
And then she's gone for another
3 years.
Almost 3 years. That's insane. Okay.
Yeah. So now what you do when you're on the run is she develops some aliases. So under the alias Robbie Hannon, she traveled to Florida and met a man named John Greenleaf Homan III. They lived together for more than a year before marrying in May of 1981. So that's, yeah, about 3 years after her husband died. She took his last name and the couple moved to good old New Hampshire late in the summer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, everyone ends up in New Hampshire, I swear.
What town? Do you know?
It doesn't say in there. Oh, Dover.
Oh, okay.
Dover,
okay, New Hampshire. That's not far.
The couple moved... Oh, I already said that. Late in 1982, she left New Hampshire, telling her husband that she needed to attend family business and see some doctors about an illness. During this time, she traveled to both Florida and Texas using the alias Terry Martin as an imaginary twin sister. Okay, it's going to start to get
confusing. My story has to do with twins, too.
Ooh.
Well, hers isn't real, but...
Oh, okay, so yours has real twins.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, so she's now made up a twin, that she has a twin sister.
Yep, she's now, Robbie has made up a twin sister named Terry. So during this trip, Audrey called her husband, Homan, as Terry, the twin sister, and informed him that his wife, Robbie, had died in Texas, saying there was no need for him to claim the body because it had been donated to medical science. After getting...
This poor clueless guy. He has no idea what he's gotten himself into.
I know. After getting to know Terry over the phone, Homan expressed interest in meeting her. She agreed, saying that he needed to put Robbie's death behind him. In November 1982, after changing her hair color and losing weight, Audrey returned to New Hampshire and reunited with Homan, posing as his deceased wife's sister.
Oh my god.
And,
that's wild. Okay.
Yeah. An obituary for Robbie appeared in a New Hampshire newspaper, but aroused suspicion when police were unable to verify any of the information that it contained. Homan's co-workers also had suspicions about his new sister-in-law and were concerned that foul play may be at hand. So everyone was concerned except Homan about that. A detective with the New Hampshire State Police surmised that the woman living as Terry and Robbie were the same person. Homan's concerned co-workers discovered that the Medical Research Institute of Texas, where Robbie's quote-unquote body was supposedly handed over for study, was non-existent, and as was the church that eulogized her death. So none of it even existed, the information that she gave.
Okay.
While Homan's workplace was audited and didn't find any embezzlement, because now the police are involved thinking that this woman isn't who she said she was, authorities still believe that Terry Martin was possibly a fugitive bank robber named Carol Manning, which is unrelated. It was later dropped, but it was enough to get her on their radar of someone to look for. In the meantime, Terry, quote-unquote, had taken a secretarial job in Brattleboro, Vermont, and was arrested. While being interrogated by Vermont state troopers, she confessed that she was wanted in Alabama on check fraud charges and divulged her true name, which would be Audrey Marie Hilly. Contact with the Alabama authorities confirmed this, while also disclosing the more serious charges for murder and attempted murder. So she was extradited to Alabama in January of 1983. So they got her. She was found guilty, sentenced in June 19th of 1983 to life in prison for her husband's murder and 20 years for attempting to kill her daughter. She began serving her sentence in 1983 at the Julia Tutwiler Prison for Women in Wetumpka, Alabama, which is a maximum security prison. So she was considered a model prisoner while she was there, and her secretarial background made it so she was able to do like clerical work inside the prison. She got good behavior points and earned her several one-day passes from prison, from which she returned as scheduled, no problems. In February of 1987, Marie was given a three-day pass to go visit her husband, who they're still married now after being proven to be never who she said she was at all and tricking him into thinking it was his dead wife's sister. Like, they're still married. Never got a divorce. He moved from New Hampshire to Anniston, Alabama to be closer to him, to her, while she was in jail, which is for life. They spent a day at the Anniston Motel. And when Homan left for a few hours, she disappeared, leaving behind a note asking for his forgiveness. He alerted the police, and her escape pretty much made it so there were alterations to the furlough policy at the Alabama jail. So I don't think they really do that anymore with the day passes and stuff.
So that's when she took off, was on one of the day passes?
Yes, she was on a three-day pass to go visit her husband. Four days after she vanished from the motel, Marie was found delirious on the back porch of a house in nearby Anniston. The woman who found Marie described her appearance as scary, stating she was dirty with mud on her face and long fingernails. She alerted the police, who then summoned paramedics. She was conscious at the scene, but lost consciousness while being transported to a nearby hospital for treatment. When she got to the hospital, she suffered a heart attack. Doctors attempted to revive her, but were unsuccessful, and she was pronounced dead 3.5 hours after being found.
Okay, well, that's not what I expected.
I know. She had been crawling around in the woods, drenched for 4 days of frequent rain and exposure to temperatures that dropped to about freezing. So her final cause of death was attributed to hypothermia and exposure. So she died on the run.
Interesting change of behavior from being a sneaky little weirdo trying to poison people to crawling around in the woods outside in the cold.
Yeah, not the best death, I'm guessing. I can imagine.
Was she, do we know why she was doing that? Like,
well, I think because she had gone on the run and she just kind of went through the woods, like probably trying to find some sort of shelter or something and couldn't find it.
So she wasn't like going crazy. She was just.
Yeah, she was just pretty much
trying to get away, I guess.
Right. Exactly. Which I'm guessing if her husband was still with her after all that, I'm pretty sure he probably would have helped her escape. And maybe he did. And is just saying that he didn't, you know. So,
yeah.
Who knows? Her daughter is still alive. She doesn't comment on it anymore. She was on an episode of Snapped talking about how her mother, and she actually still held love for her mother until she passed away, but no longer wants to talk about anything. So there wasn't really a lot of information on her daughter, but she seemed to be doing good.
Damn.
Yeah.
Huh. Well, that's definitely not how I expected that to end, but...
Yeah, it's a crazy...
So she only served some time and then just died.
Right, exactly. Then went down on her own terms. Miss Audrey Marie Hilly.
So who... Was it just her husband that she actually was able to kill?
Yes. Her husband was the only one that was proven to actually die from the poisoning. And it looks like she was... like kind of microdosing the people around her So she was probably testing it on people to see how much people could take, I'm assuming.
Yeah, well, it sounds... I mean, the daughter had, what, over 100 times what you're supposed to? Like, I think it's a pretty high dosage you're given there. It's crazy that she made it through.
Yeah. Yeah, especially if she was injecting it into her. I'm assuming it was arsenic that she was injecting into her daughter.
Yeah, right. I would assume those vitamins were a little arsenic mixture.
Right. Vitamin A. So, yeah. That's my story.
Interesting. Well, mm-hmm. I'm glad she only was able to... Well, not glad, but thankfully only one person had to succumb to her poisonings besides herself.
Yeah.
I was almost going to say, ask if she, like, went crazy and was, like, giving herself the arsenic. I don't know, just not, like, not that she'd feel guilt by any means, but, like, some type of snap where she just does it to herself and that's kind of what made her go out into the woods, but...
Oh, yeah. No. Nope, just regular crazy people stuff. I shouldn't say crazy. I don't know what a better way to say that is, but... Little unhinged.
Right.
All right.
Oh, so should we good go? Story. That was a good one.
Thanks. So what do you got for us?
All right. So as we said earlier, we're still in Alabama because that's what we picked.
Still there.
This week. So I have a murder case for you of Betty and Jack Wilson. So the murder of Jack Wilson
cracked
took place-
up a little bit. What are their names?
Betty and Jack Wilson.
Okay.
So the murder of Jack Wilson took place on May 22nd, 1992 at about 9:30 p.m. Jack's wife, Betty Wilson, made a call to 911 when she came home from her AA meeting and found her husband brutally murdered lying at the top of their staircase. And it was said that when Betty made the phone call to 911 that she seemed very shocked and convincingly upset. So shortly after Betty made that 911 call, the police arrived and secured the scene, confirming that there was no one else there. There was no one in the house. There was no apparent threat. Police said there was blood on the floor, blood splatter on the wall, and it was very evident Jack had been very brutally beaten, including both his arms were fractured.
Ooh.
Police noted that an aluminum bat was found next to him that was covered in blood. Yeah, so this was pretty gruesome, what they did to poor Jack here.
He was beaten with a bat?
They think so. I don't know. Stuff came out in the end where they weren't positive. They almost weren't positive if it was even one person they did it. They weren't positive if it was the bat. It kind of goes back and forth a little bit. So I don't know if the bat was covered in blood, so I would assume it was used to an extent, but I don't think they for sure could, like, rule in or out what was used.
Hmm. Okay.
So Jack was born May 5th, 1937, and he was born in Chicago, Illinois. He grew up with adoptive parents, and it was noted that he didn't have great eyesight, which led him to becoming an ophthalmologist as an adult. He overall seemed like a really good guy. He often did surgeries for free. He was a really liked guy, and it's sad that this happened to him because he was all around a pretty great person.
Hmm.
So Jack was married once before he was married to Betty, to his first wife's name was Julia, but ultimately they ended up divorcing, but they did have three children together. Jack was really, really, really good at his job, but he wasn't so great at balancing the work and home life. So I think he just worked a lot and wasn't super present with the family and helping out in that aspect, which ultimately did lead to his divorce. Like, I don't think he wasn't an abusive father by any means or, like, abusive to his wife. I think he just put a lot of focus into his work, and that just didn't work for Julia, his first wife.
Yeah, understandable.
Yeah. So after that is when he met Betty, who she was a nurse where Jack was practicing. Betty was born in 1945 in Gadsden, Alabama, and notably had a twin sister, there it is, who was named Peggy.
Jack and Peggy.
Betty and Peggy.
Oh, Betty had the twin?
Yes.
Oh, okay, sorry. That was Jack. Betty and Peggy. No, that's so even Betty, cuter.
Yes. So the girls did have their differences growing up. Peggy was very in-your-face, outgoing, and popular, while Betty was more reserved and introverted. Betty, like Jack, was also married once before. She married her high school sweetheart very young. They also had children together. When they divorced, her husband kept the kids, and Betty moved to Huntsville, Alabama, in search of new jobs. So the husband was like, okay, like, I'll hang on to the kids while you kind of get settled and, you know, get a job, figure yourself out. And she did intend to get her kids back, but she enjoyed her freedom more and never ended up taking the kids back. I think she did see them here and there, but, like, she got rid of that parent role real quick.
Okay.
When Jack and Betty first met, they got along amazingly. It was noted that they moved in together after only two dates. Oh. So they were just, like, full green light from the start.
Yeah.
So 2 years later, Jack was diagnosed with Crohn's disease. He ended up needing surgery that left him with an ostomy bag.
Aw, poor Jack.
Yeah, I know. I know, he really goes through it.
Yeah.
Shortly after that, Jack and Betty got married in 1978. Betty was very happy being a doctor's wife. She had money, and she lived a very comfortable life. You know, they had a nice house. She pretty much had, you know, the money and house she left for, because Jack was a doctor and he did so well, and his career only got better, so he was only making more money.
Right.
So in their marriage, Jack started to notice Betty having a problem with alcohol. She felt a lot of pressure being a doctor's wife at the same time as she was enjoying it. I think it, in, like, social situations, she would turn to drinking to kind of, you know, fit in. And, like, a lot of people use alcohol to kind of lower their stress. And right. But I think she just took it overboard. And Jack expressed to her that he really didn't like it when she was like that.
Mm-hmm.
And surprisingly, Betty became very involved in AA, and she did quit drinking.
Nice.
So now we're getting back into the details of the actual murder.
And you, just to interrupt for a sec, so she was coming home from an AA meeting, right? And found him at the top of the stairs?
Yes, when she found him.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that was in 1992?
Yep, 1992.
Okay, so they were married a while before that happened.
Yes. Yeah, they were together for a while.
Okay.
So now we're going to get back into the details of the actual murder. A young boy claimed he had seen Jack around 4:30 p.m. that night, about 5 hours before he was found dead. The boy had seen Jack outside with the aluminum baseball bat, and Jack was banging a sign into the ground, into his yard. And then Jack returned into the house and he took the bat with him.
Oh, okay.
So police determined Jack's time of death between 4:30 and 9:30 p.m. So obviously, I think they got the 4:30 from, you know, the boy seeing him obviously alive and outside and fine at 4:30. And then I think Betty got home at 9:30.
So was she supposedly at the meeting that entire time from 4:30 to 9:30? Or was it like she worked and then went to a meeting?
I'm not positive.
Okay.
I don't know if...
I'm going to say that's a long-ass meeting.
She definitely wasn't home.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So after Betty had called police when she first came home and found her husband dead, it was noted that her twin sister Peggy drove the two-hour drive between the two of them immediately over to be with Betty. So I guess they lived 2 hours away, and immediately Peggy drove to be with Betty. So first thoughts of what maybe happened was a robbery gone wrong. Police tried to find clues that maybe led to that theory, but they couldn't find anything. Jack's wallet was on the floor, open. Nothing was taken. There was plenty of money, nice things, and there was nothing taken from the home. So, and then you move on to how badly Jack was beaten, and there was definitely overkill. So,
yeah,
that, you know, that seems more the motive. It was just Jack. There was no intent to steal anything.
Right.
His head was beaten pretty much from every direction. Like, it was brutal. Okay, so police started to look into people that knew the Wilsons. There really weren't any red flags about Jack. Again, he seemed like a good guy. Everybody had good things to say about him. But there were red flags about Betty. She had a reputation around the town, and it wasn't the best. She was known to have different affairs. However, Betty's alibi was concrete, and she typically... Oh, okay. However, Betty's alibi was concrete, and as she typically did, she went to her AA meeting that night and didn't arrive back home until about 9:30 p.m. So I'm not positive how long the meeting was or where she was before.
Right.
Well, I guess we find out where she is before, but I don't know where Jack thinks she is.
Okay.
But clearly, she didn't seem to be around much if she was having affairs and whatnot, so... And this is another poor Jack moment. Betty did say that Jack's... What kind of bag is it? I wrote it wrong.
Ostomy?
Because I spelt it wrong.
Or colostomy?
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
That's what I have written. That's okay. What I have written two different times.
Well, I think... I want to say they're different, but I'm not sure how. Because I've heard both of them, but I think they're pretty much the same thing. Yeah. Because I've heard both, too. I've heard ostomy bag and colostomy bag. So maybe it's where they're hooked up to. Like, one's your colon and the other one's something else.
I'll find an answer.
Which, back in the 70s or even 90s is... They've come a long way, because they're really nice now. Like, they're not a big deal, but I think they were pretty gnarly back then.
Okay.
No, so I guess...
So a colostomy bag is a specific type of ostomy bag.
Right.
I think, like you said, it's just where they collect from.
Because I think the colostomy bag... Like, it acts as your colon. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So, I remember when I was doing this, I think I went to write ostomy again, and I was like, that doesn't look right. And then I went back, and they said colostomy, and I was like, okay, so that's definitely what it is, if there's a big difference, but I don't think there is. I think it just is, like you said, where it's attached to.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So, Betty did say it was very known that she wasn't a fan of Jack's colostomy bag, and it put an end to their sex life, so she had to go somewhere else for that.
Aww, Jack.
I know, right? Poor guy. Yeah. Such a nice guy, you know, procedure he can't help, and probably has been in a ton of pain.
Right, yeah.
And so Betty said that Jack knew about the affair she was having and was okay with it, but police couldn't find any proof that Jack was okay with it at all.
Right.
So 3 days into the investigation, police are made aware of a tip that had come in before Jack's murder. So a tip had been called in saying that there was going to be a murder in Huntsville and that a man named James White had been hired to kill a Huntsville doctor.
Hmm.
We don't know who made that tip. We just know that they had apparently overheard someone saying all this.
Hmm. Interesting.
Right. So the... informant also said that this James guy had been hired by a woman named Peggy. And who's Peggy? Peggy is Betty's twin sister.
Oh.
When the tip first came in, yeah, when the tip first came in, the police couldn't do much with it because it didn't make a whole lot of sense. But now, obviously, it made sense and seemed to fit the case. There's a lot of, obviously, doctors in one town. Like, they couldn't pinpoint it to anybody.
Right.
So now that the police had the names James White, they head out to where his last known location was to ask him questions, and it's noted he's cooperative with them. James was a Vietnam vet with PTSD. He was a known drug user, a felon, didn't seem to be the best all-around guy. He did, however, deny the murder of Jack Wilson. Okay. So the police, ended up... you know, bringing him in, and what finally... I noted this because I thought it was interesting, but James finally began to talk when the person that was interviewing him said that he was going to make... he was going to say a prayer for the food. I guess they had food that they were about to eat, and James asked if he'd say a prayer for him too. So I guess they kind of, bonded over that, and then prayed together, and then that's when James began revealing that he was involved with the murder.
Hmm.
So James met Peggy a year before Jack's murder. Peggy was a teacher in the town. James was a carpenter, and Peggy had hired him to do some work on her house. James said that after that, they became friends, but it seemed like a really toxic friendship, relationship, whatever you want to call it. They weren't actually together, but James definitely began to have feelings. Peggy began to push the idea that her twin sister was miserable at home, that Jack was abusive, and pretty much that, Betty needed to get out of there.
Right.
James wanting Peggy's affection and to make her happy, said he would kill Jack, but he wanted $5,000 to do it.
$5,000, huh? James said, that's a steal.
Right.
Jeez.
Right. I know. That's why everybody, like, the police were kind of like, okay. James said that the entire thing was Peggy's plan, and she organized it. Although a month before the murder, James realized Betty was part of it too, because she was the one that was going to give him the first payment for the hit.
Ooh.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Huh.
Okay. So, 2 days before the murder, he met up with both
Petty and Beggy. I like that better.
And was given what he was supposed to use as the murder weapon, which was a .38 caliber revolver. So they gave him a gun to use for the murder. The final meeting was with Betty, and it was just hours before the murder. So that's what she was doing before the murder. Again, I don't know what Jack thought she was doing, but she was meeting up with James,
right,
planning Jack's murder. Police were able to confirm that James was telling the truth, because he described the shoes Betty was wearing when they met up before the murder. And they were the same shoes police made note of that Betty was wearing when they saw her later after she had called about that Jack was dead. So they were like some like crazy like flower printed shoes.
Of course.
And James described those that night, and she was wearing those shoes when the police, you know, saw her. So James definitely met up with her.
Yikes.
So next, James said he got into Betty's car, and she drove him over to her and Jack's house. James left the gun behind and instead had some rope and a knife. James then goes into the house, and he waits for Jack to get home. When Jack did arrive home, he met James face-to-face at the top of the stairway, and Jack still had the aluminum bat in his hands. Ultimately, James was able to overpower Jack and use the bat to beat him. After this, James said Betty came and picked him up. This was before her 911 call. And just let him out back to where his vehicle was parked a ways away.
Ugh. So James did she
claim that he was...
Did she go to her AA meeting after all this happened? Like, I think you have to sign into those things, so they should have been able to check that she went.
I think so. I think she did go.
Oh my god. The lady's crazy.
Yeah.
Oh, that's intense.
Right, because it said she had an alibi, so they must have known she was for sure there and just dropped James off and picked him up before and after.
Oh, man. Wow.
Right? I know. So, James did claim that he was on drugs and he was drinking the night of the murder.
Mm-hmm.
And he, for multiple reasons, was a trustworthy person, so police weren't sure what was true and what wasn't. Obviously, parts seemed true. You know, he obviously described the bat, the shoes, so it seemed like his story was truth, but they couldn't credit all of it if he was obviously in an altered state of mind.
Right.
So now it was police's job to go out and figure out what part of James's story was true or not. When they searched his home, they did find a gun he was going to use buried in the floorboards of his house. They found out that the gun is registered to Betty. They also found the library book that James said Betty had put some of the payment for the murder in. And that book was, in fact, checked out by Betty.
Mm, wow.
So it does seem like most of his story was accurate.
Yeah.
So now police want to find motive why Petty... Oh, my God.
Petty Betty.
Why Betty and Peggy... I can't get it right. Would even construct this plan in the first place.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering.
Right, because, again, Jack seemed like a good guy, but...
And he knew...
As most things do.
According to her, he knew that she was having affairs.
Right. So, it really all just came down to money, which most things do. Definitely a theme. Jack was worth about $6 million between property and insurance.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
And, of course, Betty was the beneficiary. Divorce wasn't an option because if her affairs came out, there was a good chance Betty would only get a small portion of the money.
Mm.
So it seemed like Betty and Peggy were a lot closer than it seemed. Peggy knew if Betty got away with the money, then she would also be happily taken care of financially. You know, Betty would obviously share some of the money with Peggy, so it would benefit both of them. So 5 days after Jack's murder, May 27th, 1992, both Betty and Peggy are arrested. Betty denied that James was paid and hired to kill Jack. Both sisters continued to say that they had nothing to do with it and did not hire James. Both women were charged with conspiracy and capital murder. Betty's trial was first on February 23rd, 1993, so 9 months later. Their star witness was, of course, James, and the court had made a deal with him that if he testified against both women, that he would receive a life sentence and not the death penalty.
Okay.
Other witnesses did come up, including friends, and testified about how Betty acted towards Jack and how she treated him, which was awful. It seemed apparent that Betty didn't really like Jack for many reasons. It takes the jury about 10 hours to come to their decision on Betty's case, and she's found guilty. She got a sentence of life without parole. Good. 6 months later was Peggy's trial. The only difference between both cases was that Peggy was loved by her friends in the community, and she seemed to all around be a decent person. There were some questions about whether...
Peggy?
The bat? Yes.
Okay.
So here's where we get into a little bit of... There was some question about whether the bat was what was used, or a fire poker that was missing from downstairs. But I didn't read anything about them finding a fire poker. Hold on, I just sneezed. Ugh, I went away. Okay.
Oh, wow. Bless you.
But, like... And I guess they also didn't think that Jack was killed at the top of the stairs. It didn't, like... From what I remember, it didn't go super into detail why, like, all of a sudden they were thinking maybe it wasn't the bat, maybe it wasn't the... He wasn't killed at the top of the stairs. But they were pushing it that it was James and an accomplice that did the murder, and Peggy and Betty had nothing to do with it. Wow. Which, personally, I think is very far-fetched.
Yeah.
Because I feel like this James guy doesn't have a single motive. It doesn't benefit him at all.
Right. Yeah.
If he's not getting paid by somebody, like, I don't think, you know. So, Peggy was found not guilty.
Oh.
So... It seemed like Peggy's trial got some extra information and bits put into it that seemed to sway the jury. But other than, you know, those few things, but, like, for the most part, they were tried on, like, the same exact information. And Betty got, you know, convicted and Peggy didn't.
So was Peggy charged with the same thing, or was it more of, like, a conspiracy to murder?
I think so. I believe, because it, I think they were charged, yeah, because hold on, didn't I say... Yeah, both women were charged with conspiracy and capital murder. So they were both charged with the same thing.
Oh.
Again, pretty much same trial, but Peggy got convicted, or Betty got convicted and...
Peggy got nothing.
Correct.
Okay. Huh.
So Betty was denied 2 appeals for a new trial by the Alabama Supreme Court. Peggy's living her life in Alabama. James hasn't been granted parole and he continues his sentence. His next parole hearing is 2026. Betty remains in jail. And I just... When I was, like, looking up, just trying to see final things, I guess Betty did get married, again, while in prison.
Jeez.
But she remains in there, and Peggy's living her life. James is in jail. And that's pretty much the end of it. I just wonder, like, they were so close and, like, so conniving together. Like, I believe it happened, at least for the most part, the way it did. Like, I believe that the two of them set it up and, like...
Yeah.
You know, whether Peggy thought she was helping... She really was helping Betty or whatever. I'm curious, like, that had to rock them when one got sentenced for life and
yeah.
one literally got nothing. Like, I just imagine, like, something had to, like, be schemed after. Not that they could really do anything, but I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm just surprised that it just was like, yep, Peggy lives her life. She's good. Betty's in jail. Like,
I don't know. It is weird. I can see why she wouldn't have been convicted, because if it shows that Betty was the one that made the payments and she checked out the book and drove him and stuff, so I guess there probably wasn't enough to convict Peggy, and hopefully she wasn't like, I wonder if Betty played on the fact that she knew her sister would be there for her if she did complain enough, and, you know, I wonder if it was just a brainwashing on that part. Like, maybe she realized some stuff after and was like, oh, that was all planned, you know? Like, thought about it after she was in jail and go, that bitch tried to set me up with her, you know? So, I don't know.
No, I agree. There's definitely, different things online, too, that, like, you know, is the wrong sister in jail? Is she wrongly in jail? Are they, should they both be in jail? Like, there's so many back and forth with it because it's just kind of messy information for the most part, and you can't tell who was involved to what degree. But I think that was an interesting one.
Yeah.
Considering there was two complete different verdicts on pretty much the same information.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that is crazy. Poor Jack. It's the moral of the story.
I know, right. And he's just a nice guy doing some free surgeries to help people in their eyeballs, and then...
Yeah. Oh, guy.
Gets that. Yeah, so...
Oh, man.
Sad for Jack, but at least Betty's in prison.
Yeah.
And the guy who committed the murder is also in prison, so...
And Peggy hasn't been in
justice there.
Any trouble?
No, like I said, she... Like, everybody said she was a nice person. She was, like, a first grade teacher. Like, there was nothing red flag about her at all, really. It was very opposite of Betty.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That is crazy. Is my Alabama story.
Yeah. I like it. I liked it. I liked it and didn't like it.
Right. No, I thought that was... I think that's the first, like, murder I've covered. I usually do the missing persons because I think those are... I like when there's... a mystery when there's just, I don't know, that what the fuck happened or what the fuck could have happened just blows my mind. Like, I can't, I don't know. I think that stuff is so fascinating, isn't a great word, but like, I just want to know. I just want to be able to solve them.
Right.
But I thought that was a interesting story.
Me too. I think that was a good first episode back.
Yeah, hopefully our new dynamic works a little bit. We're going to finish it up with a little palate cleanser fun fact.
Yeah. And I have one, if you want one.
Yes.
So I have one. Mine is an animal one. And did you know that penguins have a gland above their eyes that will turn salt water into fresh water so their eyes don't sting from keeping them open underwater when they're swimming?
That's insane. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that. What?
Yeah. So
that's really cool.
I had never thought about that. Like, oh yeah, that's kind of, so I wonder if like, I'll have to look up if like seals and stuff have the same thing.
I was just gonna say, like, do most animals in the water have that? Because I know some animals have like more than one eyelid, but it's interesting that penguins have like a gland versus like just an eyelid that shields their eye from the salt, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's my fun
Speaking
one.
Speaking of penguins, that I like that. I like animal stuff. I have been playing, did you ever play, used to play Zoo Tycoon?
No.
I guess that's probably more my age thing. Do you know what that is?
No. I thought you were going to talk about how you started doing Club Penguin again, but speaking of penguins.
I haven't done that in a while, but no. So they have Zoo Tycoon. I used to play when I was a kid. It's like Roller Coaster Tycoon.
Okay.
You ever heard of those?
I remember Roller Coaster Tycoon. I don't think I did any of those, though.
I used to play those when I was a kid, but they just came out with, so they have like, now they have Planet Coaster and Planet Zoo, and they just came out with Planet Zoo on console, so I have it on my PS5. In the past 48 hours, solidly straight, I have probably played, like, when you bunch them all together, 12 straight hours of that game in the past 48 hours.
Oh my gosh. Damn.
Yeah. So, and I have penguins, and that was my connection.
And I have penguins.
That's my interesting 12 thing. That's what I've been up to. 12
hours. That's insane.
Yeah, because I did it while I played it from, like, the day before yesterday. I played it from, like, probably about 3:30 to 10:30.
Oh, my God.
Straight. My eyeballs felt like they were going to fall out of my face.
I'm sure.
And then I did the same thing pretty much the next day. So maybe even, like, 13 hours. But
well, that sounds like you have an excellent zoo going.
I do.
How
it's overrun by capybara. Aww, and raccoons.
Cute. I love capybaras.
Yep. They're cute, but they reproduce like crazy. I had, I think, 37 at one point, and I had to get rid of them real quick. But
what do you mean by get rid of them? What does that mean?
So the point is to like when you get them, they, like, have, like, low stats, and you're supposed to, like, it's like, you know, captive breed them, and then they get better stats, and you release them to the wild, so I released some to the wild.
Okay. I was like, you're not, like, just killing the weakest ones. The capybara. Yeah, okay. And say.
No. They get to go live in the wild.
Yay.
But the video game wild, but yeah.
Steve Irwin would be proud.
Obsessing over that. He would be. And that, you know, I don't know if there's any other person I would want that would mean more if they were proud of me than him.
Same. Love that guy.
In all honesty, if that guy told me he was proud of me, I'd be like, all right.
Life I've complete. Done it.
Yep.
All right. Well, I guess that's it.
That was hopefully a good first episode back. Hopefully people like it. We definitely need feedback. We need shares.
Yes.
If you have something to tell us, you know, story, crazy story, spooky story, anything you've done, anything you want to share, we'd like to ultimately incorporate that aspect into the new things we've done as well, while still doing the true crime and headlines and fun facts. So I hope we get some good feedback.
Yeah. And we're going to get the Instagram back up and running. What have you done? Pod on Insta. And our email, I believe, is whathaveyoudonepod@gmail, right?
Yes. Yeah. So check out those. Hit us up. Hopefully we'll be having our social media run a little bit better, because I don't know how to do that.
Yeah.
Especially well.
Not so good.
So hopefully we're coming back strong.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. Well, thanks, everyone. Talk to you later.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bye.